Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. In a rare bright spot for Democrats this week, Congressman Pat Ryan won a second full term in New York's 18th District Tuesday. But the political landscape he faces in the House remains unclear. The Legislative Gazette's Jesse King has more.
The Democrat defeated Republican Allison Esposito, a former NYPD officer and candidate for lieutenant governor, with roughly 54% of the vote at the end of the night, according to unofficial results from the State Board of Elections. In front of a crowd of supporters in Kingston, Ryan announced that Esposito had called him to concede.
We centered this campaign again on freedom, on patriotism, on an optimistic, forward-looking vision for our country. And we really did our best to bring people together and call to the best in people at such a difficult and divisive and dark moment in our country.
It's a very interesting perspective we're talking about.
The celebrations were dampened by lingering uncertainty in the night's broader races for control of Congress and the White House. Former President Donald Trump was declared the winner over Democratic Vice President Kamala Harris, and Republicans ultimately flipped the Senate. Democrats were able to hold the 18th and flip a couple key districts in New York, but overall control of the House is still up in the air. Watching the results come in, Democratic Dutchess County legislator Joe Donaldson stood quietly on the sidelines.
I feel nervous. I got butterflies in my stomach. I'm hoping for the best. But I'm being really cautious. I tried to prepare myself for both circumstances, but I'm hoping we'll come out on top.
Beacon resident Luther Lopez says he spent the day working as a poll watcher in Dutchess County.
My anxiety, I'm good. I'm okay. We did what we can do, so now it's up to see what the universe says now. We did what we could. It's over now. Nothing can be done, right? So I'm good.
Other candidates at the watch party fared well Tuesday. State Assemblymember Sarah Hannah Shrestha, a Democratic Socialist, defeated Republican Jack Hayes to win another term in the 103rd District. Assemblyman Jonathan Jacobson, a Democrat who ran unopposed, celebrated his return to the legislature. And State Senator Michelle Hinchey turned back a challenge from Republican Patrick Sheehan to win her third term in the state Senate. Speaking with WAMC, Hinchey says she's got a lot on her to-do list next session.
We'll continue our fight for more housing. We have to make sure that we have a planet to live on. It should not be 80 degrees in November. We have to make sure that we are prioritizing solutions to combat the climate crisis, and that has to be a priority. And then we're always looking for our local things. Of course, I chair agriculture, so making sure that we're supporting our local family farms and bringing back the infrastructure like cell phone service and internet service for all of our communities to have an equal shot.
The 18th District race focused heavily on abortion rights, immigration, and the economy. Ryan targeted Esposito for supporting the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade in 2022, while Esposito frequently tried to tie Ryan to President Joe Biden's policies at the U.S. southern border. Speaking at her own watch party in Goshen, Esposito thanked her team for their support.
We worked our asses off. It sucks. But the people have spoken, and I called Congressman Ryan. I wished him luck. We had a very nice conversation where I told him to do good. I told him that I believed that we had the best interests of our country at heart, and I asked him to spend his next term putting our people first.
Asked Tuesday if he thinks he can lead effectively with a potential Republican stronghold in Washington, D.C., Ryan says he's not calling it quits just yet.
I will always be a leader working to find the places where there's unity and agreement and we can build consensus, because the needs of folks, especially on affordability, cost of housing and health care and gas and groceries, the needs and challenges are so high, we have to work together in this country.
Elsewhere in the Hudson Valley, Westchester County Executive George Latimer is going to Congress after winning the 16th district over Republican Miriam Levitt Flisser. GOP Congressman Mike Lawler declared victory over Democrat Mondaire Jones in the 17th district. Unofficial results put Lawler ahead of Jones with roughly 50% of the vote, while Jones had close to 44%. At the state level, State Senator Rob Rollison turned back a challenge by Dutchess County Minority Leader Yvette Valdez-Smith, and State Senator James Skoufis came out on top in a three-way race for the 42nd district between Republican Dory Hoole and Conservative Party candidate Timothy John Mitz. Reporting from Kingston, I'm Jesse King.
Meanwhile, incumbent candidates in New York's Capital Region saw success in races for the state legislature Tuesday. The Legislative Gazette's Aaron Shella Levine reports.
The Republican Watch Party in downtown Saratoga Springs was buzzing with energy as election night results came in. Longtime Senator Jim Todisco defended his 44th district seat from Democratic challenger Manita Songvi, a Saratoga Springs city councilor. Todisco won with about 56% of the vote. Todisco declined to comment Tuesday. In a statement Wednesday, he said he is, quote, proud that I ran a positive campaign about facts and not attacks, because that always trumps mudslinging, name-calling, and personal attacks, end quote. Wednesday morning, Songvi said she knew the race would be tough. Todisco was first elected to the state assembly in 1982 and had previously represented the 49th district before redistricting in 2022.
I think that we ran a campaign that was based on facts and talked to people about his votes. We talked to people about my vision. But at the end of the day, it seems like nationally as well as locally, the people have chosen a different path. You know, progress was clearly not on the agenda yesterday.
Songvi campaigned in support of Prop 1, or the Equal Rights Amendment. The measure enshrines protections against state discrimination based on a number of factors, including race, sex, abortion outcome, and more. Voters approved it with more than 56% in support.
I have been supporting the ERA the whole time, while my opponent called it the elimination of parents' rights. So I am really glad that we've got some good news coming out on the ERA front.
In the assembly, Republican Mary Beth Walsh defended the 112th district seat against Democratic activist Joe Seaman.
What I heard a lot from people was really talking about affordability, public safety, things like that. I tried to really drive home the point that as a member of the minority party, it's important to have a strong voice to really speak out against, you know, budgets that are getting so big, and some of the misplaced priorities that I've been seeing over the last 8 years that I've been in office. So those things really kind of resonated, I think.
Walsh, who secured 56.6% of the vote, opposes Prop 1.
I'm a little disappointed because I think that the wording of it is really vague. And I think that anytime you add anything to the New York State Constitution, it should be something that's clear enough where we can understand it. I just think that we're going to have a lot of litigation that's going to follow, and trying to figure out exactly what it does mean and what it doesn't mean. I think we could have really done a much better job wording it appropriately. But, you know, if it's the will of the voters that it's going to be, then we'll have to see how it all shakes out in the courts.
Seaman, who ran for the 112th district seat in 2020, saw the amendment's approval as a positive note for the night.
We stood against the fear-mongering. We spoke the truth. We stood with our values, including equal rights for all, including democracy and listening to the people.
Democrat Carrie Warner of the 113th district defended her seat against Republican Jeremy Messina. Warner, who has held the office for a decade, won with about 53% of the vote. Her campaign focused on creating affordable homeownership options in upstate and increasing access to health care in rural communities. She says she has her priorities straight for the next session.
I will continue to work on the issue of access to dental care in areas where there's a shortage. I will continue to advocate for nursing home and long-term care for our seniors. I'm going to continue to advocate for healthcare workers and, and hoping to pass some common sense legislation to really ease the problem that our healthcare workers in the hospitals are having with assaults on healthcare staff.
Republican Joanne Kupferman won her bid for re-election as the Saratoga County Treasurer. She was challenged by Saratoga Springs Supervisor Michelle Madigan. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Aaron Shello Levine.
Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. This week I sat down with David Lombardo. He's the host of the Capitol Press Room and Connect NY on WCNY Public Radio and TV about this week's election results.
I think the biggest takeaway, looking at this from the widest possible lens, is how poorly the Vice President Kamala Harris did in New York compared to President Joe Biden 4 years ago. And that's not to say she lost New York. Obviously, Democrats won the 28 electoral votes from New York, but she was outperformed by Biden from 4 years ago by about 5 percentage points. And that has effects down ballot. That impacts Democrats who are in tight races and were hoping to get a bump from the president being on the ticket. And I think then as a result, that trend was something we saw nationally. You could have forecasted the Harris loss kind of earlier in the night if you began to look at how poorly she was doing in, say, New York's suburbs. Thinking about Long Island, where Joe Biden was able to win, Donald Trump was able to win those suburbs this time around. And that was kind of a way to foreshadow what was going to happen in similar areas around the country.
Yeah, I believe you're right. I mean, Long Island has always been sort of a bellwether in many ways. And then you look at the total percentage, I believe, what, 45% of the vote in New York went to Donald Trump.
Yeah, and this was a big uptick for him. And looking at New York City specifically, this is an area that we think of as this bastion of Democratic voters. And it was, but not to the degree that you would expect. So, for example, Harris only got 68% of the vote in New York City. Biden beat her by 10 percentage points from 4 years ago. And we saw movements in areas like the Bronx, where Donald Trump increased his percent of the vote by 11 percentage points. That's a big, big, big problem for Democrats. It's death by a thousand cuts if you're losing your margin like that.
Well, and I heard you say something on WAMC's Vox Pop program, which you were on with our news director, Ian Pickus. You talked about the pendulum swinging back and forth. You know, I remember when a governor named Mario Cuomo used to talk about the pendulum swings back and forth in this country. And, you know, we just had 4 years of a Democrat and many people talking about whether you blame him for inflation or not. I think there's some arguments that that's beyond the president's control. But people did not feel better after the last 4 years. And you could argue that's just that pendulum swinging back saying, OK, Democrats, you had your chance. We're going back the other way.
And that's a narrative that we actually saw around the world in 2024, where we saw incumbents fare pretty poorly. Some were able to hold on to power, but by smaller margins. Here in America, obviously, the Democrats lost control of the White House. They lost control of the U.S. Senate. And I think when we think about this election in the future, we're not necessarily going to review it as a referendum on Donald Trump. I think it's going to be considered more of a referendum on the Biden administration and the last 4 years and a majority of voters saying, I've had it with the Democrats. It's time to give somebody else a chance.
You know, it's interesting to me that the governor, Kathy Hochul of New York, got a lot of criticism the last time around because of the congressional seats that were flipped. Now she's done pretty well this time, right? But is it really well enough? Is, after what you've just described, really another blow to Kathy Hochul's future chances should she want to run again?
So a lot of questions there to unpack. I'll work in reverse order. So if I'm Governor Kathy Hochul and I'm looking to run for re-election in 2026, I've got to feel pretty good about my chances, in part because of that pendulum thing we just mentioned earlier. There's going to likely be a ecosystem where Democrats are going to fare pretty well 2 years from now. Midterms typically benefit the party that's out of power in the White House. And then you also have the fact that this is still New York, which is a very blue state. But thinking about whether the governor has anything to crow about with regards to the House seats in New York that flipped from red to blue this year after flipping from blue to red 2 years ago, there are currently going to be 7 Republicans from New York's congressional delegation in 2025, and there will be 19 Democrats. That is essentially the same balance that New York saw 4 years ago, except that Republicans had one additional seat. So while Democrats will claim victory, victory has been getting them back to basically the status quo of 4 years ago. And we have to remember, 2 years ago, when Democrats were doing redistricting, they were envisioning having in excess of 20 seats in New York's congressional delegation. They were salivating over the possibility of 22. So to be at this point now in 2024, where they only have 19 seats, I don't know whether they should necessarily be patting themselves on the back or just eyeing this as a situation where they still have more room to grow, given, again, the enrollment of Democrats in New York.
I have to admit something, that when Donald Trump first came on the scene and New York Republicans gathered around him to support him, I found it strange to me in a blue state like New York, based on his rhetoric and what he was saying. And, you know, most of the politicians on the Republican side that I spoke to pushed that aside. It's just the way he talks. It's about his policies. And yet, now that you look at what's happened, I mean, I can only imagine the Republicans in New York are emboldened. Does it mean that there'll be more negotiation when it comes to the session and consideration of what Republicans have to say in New York?
So the 2025 session...
He's smiling for the record.
Yeah, the 2025 session in Albany is unlikely to be a new model of bipartisanship, in large part due to the fact that the Democrats in both the Assembly and Senate maintained very, very, very large majorities in both houses. In the Assembly, we're talking about more than 100 of 150 seats being in the Democrats' hands. That's what's called a so-called supermajority. The impact of that is debatable, but it means that they don't necessarily ever need to ask Republicans for votes. In fact, they will not ask Republicans for votes and will only pass bills that they know they can pass with at least 76 Democrats.
Is that smart?
I don't know if it's smart for coming up with the best policy, Dave, but I'll tell you, it is the way that it has worked my entire life covering politics, and really for the last 30 years, dating back to when Sheldon Silver took over as Speaker of the Assembly. Looking across,
and that was a much more power-sharing era.
It was a power-sharing era because the state Senate was controlled by Republicans at the time.
Joe Bruno, you remember.
Yep, there was Joe Bruno. Then following in his footsteps was Dean Skelos, both of whom ended up being indicted on corruption charges, as well as Sheldon Silver. But yeah, there was a necessity to reach across the aisle when it came to passing bills. But at the same time, they weren't necessarily looking for input from the minority members in their own houses. It wasn't like Sheldon Silver would reach out to the Assembly Minority Leader for input on bills. He reached out to Joe Bruno for input on what they were going to actually go about passing. But now, looking at the state Senate in 2025, Democrats there have a very, very large majority. It's going to be one or two members smaller than it was in 2023. But that is still an insurmountable number to climb for Republicans, who, again, will likely be shut out from the legislative process.
I'm sorry, Senate Minority Leader Robert Ort and Assembly Minority Leader Will Barclay. So beyond the idea that the Republicans have gotten redder in New York and that despite that, we're not going to see any negotiation with any of the Republicans because of the Democrats' majorities, what about doubling down against Trump? In other words, there's this criminal case against Trump. He was convicted in New York, and that's not a federal case. That's a state case. So now what happens with Tish James and the governor? I'm hearing things like you've got to pardon him, you've got to do all these things. What's happening?
Well, I would not begin to venture a guess as to what's going to happen in the criminal case against now President-elect Donald Trump. What I will say, and what we have begun to see from Governor Kathy Hochul and Attorney General Tish James, is this idea that the resistance, so to speak, is going to be birthed here in New York, with the governor talking about the New Freedom Initiative, basically pitching New York as a bulwark against any sort of conservative advances that might happen at the federal level. How far that can actually go is up for debate, given the fact that the federal government does have a certain supremacy over the state, but there are certain ways in which the state can be a safety net for democratic principles. But it was interesting to me to hear the governor and the attorney general focusing on this sort of pro-democracy freedom language, some of the same talking points that we heard from Democrats during the campaign, talking points that didn't really resonate with voters based on the fact that Donald Trump won, and that was not what his message was. And when I was talking to both centrist and progressive Democrats on Wednesday, trying to get their analysis of where things went wrong and what they need to focus on moving forward, they were focused solely on this idea of crafting a message that appeals to working class voters. And they have different ideas about what the message means, but they still wanted to target these people. What we heard from the governor of New York, though, in the immediate aftermath of the election was not those talking points. It was some of the same democracy, freedom, maintaining civility. And I don't know whether that's something that, if I'm the Democrats, I see as a viable path forward to winning back the White House or making gains in Congress.
That's David Lombardo, host of WCNY's The Capitol Press Room and Connect NY. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Democrats took a drubbing in Tuesday's national elections, but the party is keeping control in the New York State Legislature. As the Legislative Gazette's Samantha Simmons reports, some Capital Region Republicans also celebrated re-election wins.
Republican Scott Bendett was able to fend off Democratic lobbyist Chloe Pierce in the race for New York's 107th Assembly District. Bendett, who ran unopposed in 2022, held a nearly 6-point lead over Pierce. Speaking with WAMC, Bendett says he's glad his message resonated with voters in a district with strong Democratic pockets. The district includes parts of Albany, Rensselaer, Washington, and Columbia counties.
It was really in support of families, whether it be elderly, youth, nuclear family, whatever your family is really, you know, the most important thing, how you live your life.
Bendett says some of his main issues this upcoming session are limiting out-migration, the cost of living, and the influx of migrants.
It's a huge financial strain on school districts, on county services. The state puts forth so many unfunded mandates, it's crippling some of the counties.
New York voters approved an amendment that expanded the state constitution's anti-discrimination language in a way that supporters say would protect the civil rights of people who are seeking or have had abortions. The Equal Rights Amendment, Prop 1, bans discrimination based on someone's ethnicity, national origin, age, disability, sex, sexual orientation, gender identity, gender expression, pregnancy, pregnancy outcomes, or, quote, reproductive health care and autonomy, unquote. The Constitution already barred discrimination based on race, creed, or religion. Some opponents, like Bendett, argued that the amendment's language was not clear.
I think I have the same feelings as Newsday on Long Island when they did their editorial coming out against it. I just think it's a poorly written item, and I think that if it's so confusing and people are really having all these issues, it just should not be brought to the people right now. It should be really fine-tuned and then brought to the people.
28-year-old Pierce declined to concede the race late Tuesday.
I will continue to do that work, whether you're a member or as an advocate. I will show up, I will deliver, because I care about these four counties. I've said it from the beginning, these four counties are so special to me, and they still are. And I will do everything I can to deliver the results that we deserve and to be the person to represent in whatever capacity this district.
Elsewhere in the Capital Region, incumbent State Senator Jake Ashby won re-election against Democrat Alvin Gamble in the 43rd District. Last session, Ashby, a military veteran, advocated for legislation meant to combat organized retail crime. Ashby adds, addressing other issues like addiction and mental health also play a role in protecting the public. In a statement, Ashby said the win, quote, proves that Capital Region voters want candidates who bring people together, who deliver tangible results, and detail a positive vision for real change. I look forward to continuing our work to make New York safer, stronger, and more affordable, unquote. Gamble declined an interview request Wednesday, but congratulated Ashby in a statement, adding, quote, his success is our success, unquote. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Samantha Simmons.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen to the Legislative Gazette anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcast. Look for program number 2445. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.